This episode of the Axon Creative Podcast is brought to you by NetSuite. Now is the time to make the switch to NetSuite by Oracle, the number one financial system, because NetSuite gives you visibility and control of your financials, inventory, HR, e-commerce, and more. Visit netsuite.com/accidentalcreative to learn more. Hey everyone, welcome to the Accidental Creative Podcast. My name is Todd Henry. I'm your host and the author of a bunch of books, including The Accidental Creative, Die Empty, Louder Than Words, Herding Tigers, and the new book, The Motivation Code. So you've probably heard the old phrase, you can't change people. And I think that many of us want to believe that is true, especially given how entrenched so many of us have become in our beliefs and our behaviors over the past handful of years. It seems like there are some people who just simply cannot and will not be changed. And you've probably had that manager or that team member who, for one reason or another, was just so maddening to you and you just couldn't get along. And if you could change them, you would, but you just resigned yourself to the fact that they just can't be changed. Well, today's guest would beg to differ with you. In fact, he says that you can change people. And that's the title of his brand new book. It's Peter Bregman. He's been on the show before talking about some of his other books, which, by the way, have been some of my favorite books, actually. And on this show, he's going to talk about how you can, in fact, change people and why it's important that we try. So without further ado, here is Peter Bregman. Well, it's so great to welcome back to the Accidental Creative Podcast, Peter Bregman. Peter's the author of a number of books, including one of my favorite books, actually, 18 Minutes. I love that book, and I've been following his writing for a very long time online. He writes for a number of outlets. Got a brand new book, and the title itself is, I think, maybe going to turn some heads. Maybe that's what you intended, Peter. I don't know. It's called You Can Change Other People, The Four Steps to Help Your Colleagues, Employees, and Even Family Up Their Game. I can't wait to dive into this with you, Peter. Welcome back to the Axon Creative Podcast.
Thanks so much. I'm a huge fan of you and your writing too, Todd. So it's so fun to have these times to be able to talk.
Okay, so you pretty definitively planted a flag. It's not just you can change other people. It's you can change other people on the cover, right? What prompted you to write this book, You Can Change Other People?
Well, you know, everybody says like, well, let's actually do a thought experiment. Think for a second about someone in your life, right? Someone you're close to whom you wish would change. Okay. You don't have to say out loud who it is, but, and Everybody listening, just think of someone. My guess is that you're feeling frustrated, maybe angry, maybe sad, right? That, and you feel like you've got two choices. One is to say something, right? To say or do something which has a high chance of hurting the relationship. And the other is to say nothing, which has a high chance of maintaining your frustration and also hurting the relationship. So people feel like they're between a rock and a hard place, right? And so then they come up with this thing is you can't change other people. And by the way, every time someone says to you, hey, Todd, you can't change other people, you can only change yourself, they're trying to change you, right? They're trying to get you to stop, like, you know, trying to change someone else. So they're trying to change you.
Right.
And I change people for a living. Like I'm a coach. Like that's what I do, right? And so I know that you can. But I also know that the ways that we try to do it when we're caught in that place between say something and it's going to be wrong and it's going to come out as a criticism, they're going to get pissed off and say nothing and then I'm going to get frustrated, et cetera, that there's a third way. And so the book offers a third way, which is four steps to help you change someone while actually strengthening the relationship. And it's, you know, it's completely possible. And it's not that you can't change other people, but it's that the way we try to change other people creates resistance that we then call inevitable, but it's not at all inevitable.
All right. So I want to talk about this resistance that you referred to. You mentioned something that I'd never heard put quite this way before. People don't resist change. They resist being changed. So how do you empower people to change when they're resisting being changed?
Right. So it's a great question. And let me just sort of proof point. Like people change all the time on their own. They get married, they have children, I just got a puppy, right? Massive change. I've never had a dog before in my life. They change jobs, they leave jobs, they start new jobs. They move, they make changes all the time. But if you want to change them, like if you're, and that's their control, by the way, when they change, they're in control. They're making a decision to change. But if you try to change them, if you want them to change, then it creates an immediate dynamic where they've lost control. So, you know, let's take a step back and say, what's required? What happens when someone changes? They have four things. They have ownership, right? They own it. It's their change. They have independent capability. They can make it happen, right? They have the capability to make it happen. They have what I call emotional courage. And my last book was around emotional courage, with the willingness to feel things, because it's going to be hard. There's moments where it's going to feel hard. And you have to be willing to feel hard things in order to be able to move through and achieve anything. And they have to, what we call future-proofing, right? Which is that they have to be able to sustain the change over increasingly challenging obstacles, right? So ownership, independent capability, emotional courage, and future-proofing. So when you tell someone to change, you've immediately eradicated their ownership. It's not about them, it's about you. So what, and by the way, when you do it for them, in many cases, which happens in organizations, I'll just kind of take care of it, I'll just do this, then you're removing any ability to, any necessity to build independent capability. So what the book talks about is four steps that helps someone change in a way that builds their ownership, independent capability, their emotional courage, and their future proofing. And so it's a deliberate process. It comes out of 30 years of what I've done as a coach and what I've honed as a coach to say, how do I take this thing I do that works in coaching and apply it to anybody who wants to help anybody else change?
I love that. Again, every time I talk with you, Peter, I feel like I get these little phrases or little insights that it's those things that we suspect, but we don't necessarily have language for. When you talk about emotional courage, you mentioned that often we don't do things or we don't change because we don't want to experience emotions that we don't want to feel, or we don't want to feel something that we don't want to feel. Right. Could you unpack that a little bit more for us? Because I think that's really at the root of why a lot of us, even like during the course of COVID, people had things that they wanted to do. They thought, oh, here's something I want to do, you know, during this time. And yet they didn't do it. They didn't change in that way. And often it's because there's something that is in the way. And I think you really hit the nail on the head with that. I think they didn't want to feel something that might be uncomfortable to feel.
Right. Yeah. So think of, let's do another thought of experiment, right? Which is think of a difficult conversation you're not having. And you could also think about something in the pandemic you wanted to do, to your point, that you didn't follow through on. But I tend to think of this as a difficult conversation because it's just so clear. But think of anything that you're not following through on, that you feel is important to follow through on and that you're not following through on. And now ask the question, why not? Right? And I bet you know everything you need to know in order to follow through on it, or it's not that hard for you to learn. Right? You're perfectly capable of following through and you've had time and opportunity. So the question is, why haven't you? And it's because there's something you don't want to feel, because if you follow through on something, and I can tell you with a difficult conversation, I might feel that I'm hurting the person, or I might feel their anger back at me, or I might feel my own sense of defensiveness when they come back at me and say, well, what about you? Or I might feel just the discomfort of the possible passive aggressiveness that happens afterwards, you know, when they say, thank you so much for the feedback, and then they don't talk to you for 3 weeks. Like I'm going to have to feel all that. And if it's starting something new, I might have to feel failure. I might have to feel that I don't get it right the first time. I might have to feel that, you know, I really wanted to write, and the pandemic was a perfect time, and I started writing, and then I showed it to someone, and they said, great start. Now rip that up and start again. And I'll, you know, like, I might have this fantasy that I'm a great novelist. And when I actually try to write the novelist, I have to feel the pain of maybe that fantasy going away. Mm-hmm. And if I never write it, I could always have the fantasy. You know, all of those things are really hard to feel. I don't minimize any of that. But the answer is not to develop yourself so you don't feel those things anymore.
Right.
That is a recipe to never follow through on anything. So the answer is, can I increase my capacity to feel? If you are willing to feel everything, if you're willing to feel everything, everything I just described, the fear of failure, the loss of a fantasy, the sense of risk, the passive goods, if you're willing to feel everything, then you can do anything.
Yeah.
The only thing that stops us from moving forward is the unwillingness to feel difficult things.
I feel like we could just wrap our conversation right now, and people have gotten their value out of this 8 minutes or whatever so far. But I want to go into the four steps. Just briefly overview these four steps that you outline. I think this really is where the rubber meets the road, right? When it comes to actually being able to change other people. So let's talk about step one, which is to shift from critic to ally. What does that mean?
Yeah, and I like that you're going to the steps, because we were very, very intentional. This book is written in a different way than most of my books, and it's really like a manual. Mm-hmm. Like, here's what to say, here's what not to say, here's how to approach it, here's dialogue so you can see how this plays out. It's like, I really wanted to, it came out of a coach training that I've run, and I really wanted to like equip people with, how do I actually do this so that it's not just conceptual, but it's practical.
Great.
And the shift from critic to ally, I think, is the magic move, because almost always when we try to change people, we're coming as a critic. We're either telling them what we think they should do differently, or we're giving them advice, or we're saying, hey, I've noticed this thing, it's not working for you. Like we're, and the question is, when is the last time you changed after someone shamed you or made you feel bad about what you were doing, right? Like, great. We don't want to feel shame. So what we do is, the easiest way to not feel shame is to deny the existence of the thing that would cause the shame. So if you tell me, hey, Peter, you keep interrupting in the middle of meetings and it's really not working, and I would feel shame about that, and or you say, let me give you some advice about how not to interrupt during meetings, then my immediate and easiest response is to say, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't interrupt in meetings.
Right.
Because then if I don't interrupt in meetings, then I don't have to feel what I would have to feel in order for you to then teach me how to be better. Like when you know, it's a way of, that's why we have blind spots. It's like a defensiveness. And so the shift from critic to ally is to say, you're not approaching me as a critic. You're not approaching me as someone who's saying you're better than me, or you've got this under control, or you've noticed this thing that I'm doing poorly and you can help me. Like, you're not approaching from that energy at all. Instead, you're getting permission to have a conversation with me. So the first step in shifting from critic to ally is to get really, like, to ground yourself in any anger or frustration that you feel with the person. You're able to fully feel, that's your own emotional courage, you're able to fully feel and let go. And say, like, that doesn't mean ignoring it. It doesn't mean repressing it. But it means, yes, I'm angry. And if I approach them with any of this energy, it's very, very likely to backfire. So then the question is, what is my positive intent for the person? How do I want to help them? And it's getting in touch with that allows you to then use, we have a formula for permission in the book of getting permission to begin to have the conversation.
You know, this is, I know it's targeted at largely people that you have worked with, which are, you know, business leaders, people in the marketplace, but anybody who has had children in their household knows that this is such an important thing, right? This, very rarely do any of my kids do something unless I force them to, which never results in an outcome that is desirable, right? If I tell them, you will, just shut up and go do it right now, versus helping them understand, sort of coming alongside of them instead of criticizing them, come alongside of them and helping them understand, hey, listen, I'm on your side here. I want to figure out how we can get to this place together that we want to be. It's such a much more effective and powerful method of parenting than just criticizing the kid until they do whatever, they begrudgingly do whatever you want them to do.
Yeah, I love that you said that. And I want to say two things. One is we have a whole piece of the book up front about how to do this when you think you have power over other people, right? Mm, like when you're positional power. Because it's the same thing for leaders as it is for parents. Like, wait, I pay them. They report to me. They should just do what I say. Well, anyone who's a parent knows it doesn't work that way.
Right, right.
The second is, I love that you mentioned this because we sent out a survey mostly to business leaders, right? Business leaders and managers, but and coaches. And one of the questions we asked is, who comes to mind when you think of someone you want to change? Like the number one person that you wish would change? Like what category do they fall into? And even like, you know, even all of these business leaders, the first person that comes to mind is someone in their family. Hmm. Like someone in their family that they would change.
Interesting.
So this is like, and we wrote the book in this way that says, like, how do we speak to leaders and managers? But it's why the subtitle is like, even family. Like, how do you use this in your personal lives? Because that's where, you know, some of the deepest frustrations and possibilities lie.
Yeah. Hey everyone, we're going to get back to our conversation with Peter Bregman in just a minute. Before we do, I want to let you know today's episode is brought to you by Indeed. So no business can afford to pay for what they don't need, right? Only pay for quality candidates that meet your must-have requirements. Get Indeed. When hiring gets hard, you need Indeed, the job site that makes hiring incredibly simple with attract, interview, and hire. In fact, with Indeed, you can do all of your hiring in one place, even interviewing. Don't just hope your perfect candidate will find you. Indeed's hiring tools help you cut through the noise to hire faster and smarter. In fact, Indeed Instant Match provides a list of quality candidates whose resumes are on Indeed the moment you post a sponsored job. Indeed knows how important it is to make the most of those recruiting hours and dollars. So with Indeed, you can save time and money by setting your must-have qualifications and only paying for the quality candidates that meet them. Get started right now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/creative. Get a $75 credit at Indeed.com/creative. Indeed.com/creative. Offer valid through September 30th. Terms and conditions apply. Today's episode is also sponsored by NetSuite. Tackling your business's finance to-dos can be daunting enough without being slowed down by QuickBooks. It can slow you down with manual processes, integration difficulties, and glitchy delays that leave you scrambling for the numbers you need. Now is the time to make the switch to NetSuite by Oracle, the number one financial system, because NetSuite gives you visibility and control of your financials, inventory, HR, e-commerce, and more. In fact, it's everything you need to grow all in one place. With NetSuite, you can automate your processes and close your books in no time, no matter how big your business grows. Failing to switch to NetSuite will leave you stuck trying to make sense of your books while your competitors sprint ahead. In fact, 93% of surveyed businesses increase their visibility and control since switching to NetSuite. Special financing is back. NetSuite is offering a one-of-a-kind financing program only for those ready to switch today. Head to netsuite.com/accidentalcreative right now. That's special financing at netsuite.com/accidentalcreative. netsuite.com/accidentalcreative. We thank NetSuite for sponsoring this episode of the Accidental Creative Podcast. And now back to our conversation with Peter Bregman. So I want to move on to talking about step two, which is to identify an energizing outcome. What does that look like? How do we move people through that process?
So when we want people to change or they want to change, they're usually focused on a problem, mm-hmm. right? Something that's not working that they wish were different. And the energy of that is a contracting shutdown energy. It's very, very hard to feel hopeful. And also it often misses the point if you just tackle the problem. And a very, very simple question I ask every single time I'm coaching is, what is the outcome you want? So for example, there's an example that we use in the book about this woman, Ramona, who is a very, very difficult person on the team. And she's, you know, aggressive and constantly pushing people. And Ben, who's the leader of the team, has this problem. Like, how do I change Ramona? And the obvious answer, if Ramona is the problem, is get rid of Ramona. Like, take her off the team. Right. If you take her off the team, then she will no longer be a problem, right? But when you, and I don't want to give away, you know, like, it's kind of an example that we use throughout the book, so I don't want to give away the punchline exactly, but when you act, but I'll give away the outcome, which is that when you actually, you know, when Dara, who's talking to Ben, is sort of goes to the step and says, what's the outcome that you want? You know, the answer is, I want a high-performing team, right? That's what I want. It's not about Ramona. It's about a high-performing team. And then if we jump to the hidden opportunity, Ramona, who is the problem, actually might also hold the key to the solution to being a high-performing team. That often there is, almost always, there is a hidden opportunity hidden in the problem.
Interesting.
And so if you can leverage the problem to achieve the outcome, you've not only addressed the outcome, the problem, but you've brought yourself to a better place than you were even hoping to when you would just eradicate the problem.
And that is, that's step three, is identifying the hidden opportunity. You know, I don't know about you, but I find that sometimes when I'm too close to something, too close to a situation, it's really difficult for me to see things that maybe people from the outside could see immediately, right? But I can't see it because I'm too close to it. How do we begin to identify that hidden opportunity?
Yeah, it's a great question. And there, and we, and in the book, we sort of break up a number of different kind of typical opportunities that you find.
Yeah.
But I'll stay with this Ramona example because it's kind of fun. A key question that Dara asks Ben is, take a minute, but is there anything good about Ramona's annoying bad behavior? Like, is there anything good about it? Is there a flip side that actually is useful? And that's one way of thinking it. Another way is, you know, we've talked about emotional courage. So it is always an opportunity to develop emotional courage. It's always an opportunity. So one way of thinking about it is there an, and the way you develop emotional courage is by using emotional courage, by putting yourself in situations. So is there an opportunity here to further develop my emotional courage? And that's always a good question. So there's a number of like ways of getting past, because you're 100% right, Todd. Like, our natural inclination is the problem is a problem. Don't tell me there's something good about my problem. And by the way, if as the person helping, you tell the person, you know, there's something really good about this, right? You know, you're likely not going to get the kind of response that you want, because they're going to end up then defending why there's nothing good about their problem. So it's really about asking questions that allow them, that help focus them and allow them to draw out where there might be an opportunity.
And then the final step is that we need to create a plan. I assume that this plan has to be mutually agreed upon, right? It's not that I'm going to impose a plan upon you.
Yeah, remember, we're going for ownership, independent capability, emotional courage, and future-proofing. It's absolutely critical that they come up with their plan, because, you know, their plan that's, you know, 70% of optimum is better than your plan of 100%, because how much harder will they work to make something they've come up with successful than something that you've come up with that they think isn't going to work in the first place and would be more than happy if it didn't work, right?
Yeah.
So that's really important, and that they have a high confidence level. So we talk about this being a level 10 plan, and level 10 is, on a scale of 1 to 10, what is your level of confidence that you're going to follow through with it? Not that it's going to work. It doesn't matter if it works or not. It's an experiment. So what really matters is you follow through on taking a different action than you were going to take beforehand. And then we can come back and look at it together and go, what worked and what didn't work, and what do we want to do differently?
Yeah, I love that. So what is one overarching thing that you want people to take away from reading this book, You Can Change Other People?
You know, that don't give up hope, that you can help other people change, not only for them, but for you. Like, your life will be better. Yes, there's something altruistic about helping people change in ways that make their lives better. But it's not all altruistic. Like, your life will be better when you get better, get more skilled at helping people make the changes in their lives that will make their lives better also. and that there is a reliable process for getting it done. It's not magic. It's not mystery. It's not manipulation. There's a reliable process for helping people get done that is incredibly learnable. And you know, the more people that do it, I think the better our world becomes.
We've been talking with Peter Bregman. He's the author of a new book, You Can Change Other People. Peter, if people want to come learn more about you and your work, where can they go?
Best place is BregmanPartners.com, B-R-E-G-M-A-N, partners, plural, partners.com.
Fantastic. Well, Peter, thanks so much for taking the time to be with us today.
Such a pleasure. Always, always great talking with you, Todd. Thanks for having me.
Well, I hope that you got as much as I did out of that interview. The book is called You Can Change Other People. The author is Peter Bregman. If you'd like more of these episodes, make sure you subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts or at accidentalcreative.com. The Accidental Creative is part of the Airwave Media Network. Visit airwavemedia.com for more fine shows like this. Remember, friends, cover bands don't change the world. Don't be a cover band. You need to find your unique voice if you want to thrive. We'll see you next time.
You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.